The first 100 days of US President Donald Trump's second mandate has been a roller coaster of orders and declarations that have stunned the world. A ding-dong of measures and countermeasures, said Nigerian finance analyst Bolohun Olojede, which shook trade markets unlike any other American presidency, not even Trump's first term. Trade relations between the African continent and the United States shifted some 30 years ago when then-President Bill Clinton told African leaders at the 1998 Entebbe summit that Africa can and must play a central role in U.S. commercial and economic policy. Fast forward to 2025, President Trump has thrown all of that into question, including the crucial role of the dollar, says John Marks, editorial director of African Energy.
With the Trump presidency, everything seems to be very immediate actions, lurching from policy to policy. No one knows where they are. And it's very difficult to actually see order within this chaos. But if there is order, what the Trump presidency is saying is we are looking for complete long-term structural change in the United States, severely diminishing government, and as we've seen with Elon Musk, eviscerating USAID, but also within the global trading economy. The one thing Trump doesn't like is multilateralism. He doesn't like bodies like the World Trade Organization or the IMF or the World Bank. What he wants is bilateral deals. Negotiating those, if that's to be the case, will take a long time, and there aren't that many skilled trade negotiators, as Britain found after Brexit. These are very difficult things. Consequently, there's going to be long periods of doubt, of stasis, of nothing actually happening when people are expecting immediate action. And that's going to be, I think, devastating for markets, devastating for investment. The outlook really is grim.
Let's take a closer look at commodities, which drive the volume of U.S. trade with Africa. In 2024, the U.S. exported goods to Africa worth $32 billion, and its imports of goods from Africa was worth $39.5 billion. Eric Olander, editor-in-chief of the China Global South Project, said that oil and gas dominate Africa-U.S. trade.
Historically, it's been from Nigeria and West Africa. That has gone down over the years. Nigeria used to be the fifth largest supplier of energy to the United States. But as American shale production went up, we relied less on exports from Africa. That, again, is hoping that the Trump administration wants to change. So we see the focus on critical minerals now, particularly in the DRC, where they're doing in these talks for a security in exchange for access to minerals. Type of relationship. And that seems to be moving forward. And so while the United States is really not interested in Africa for almost every other thing, whether it's aid, whether it's cultural exchanges, educational exchanges, I mean, the State Department is looking to close a significant number of diplomatic missions in Africa. They've cut USAID. In the first Trump administration, he wanted to cut AFRICOM, the military unit that oversees the continent for the United States. Congress didn't let him do that, but my guess is AFRICOM is probably going to be back on the chopping block at some point, maybe not this budget cycle, but the next one. But critical minerals, that's the one area that the Trump administration's focused on in Africa.
Which one precisely?
Well, they're looking at cobalt from the DRC particularly. So copper, cobalt are the ones that they're most interested in. Lithium can be acquired through a number of different places, but the Congo is really the Saudi Arabia of cobalt. And that's something that's of keen interest to them, particularly to build non-Chinese supply chains that feed into the U.S. national security infrastructure. So F-35s need cobalt. They want to have their own supply chain that doesn't touch the Chinese in order to feed the U.S. military's technology. But the United States is going back to a different time. They want fossil fuels. They want to rely more on oil and gas. And when they look at critical minerals, they're not looking at that for renewable energy. They're looking at it for specifically for weapons and for their defense infrastructure, much more than, say, cars and automotive, which they're less concerned about.
On the 2nd of April at the White House Rose Garden, President Trump made a show in announcing his so-called Liberation Day tariffs on U.S. imports from countries worldwide.
My fellow Americans, this is Liberation Day. waiting for a long time. April 2nd, 2025 will forever be remembered as the day we began to make America wealthy again. Gonna make it wealthy, good and wealthy. For decades, our country has been looted, pillaged, raped, and plundered by nations near and far, both friend and foe alike. In a few moments, I will sign a historic executive order instituting reciprocal tariffs on countries throughout the world. Reciprocal, that means they do it to us and we do it to them.
Then, only a week later, on the 9th of April, Trump backed down, announcing a 90-day pause on all tariffs that went into effect just a week before. Instead, a flat 10% rate will be applied on exports to the United States, except for China, whose goods face even higher tariffs. Washington slapped 145% tariffs on most Chinese goods. Beijing retaliated with 125 levies on U.S. imports. The endgame of the so-called Liberation Day tariffs appeared to be a trade war between the United States and China. In the battle of the two economic giants, have the African nations become the collateral damage, Eric Olander?
To some extent, yes. And maybe to some extent, not so much. So South Africa, which accounts for a considerable amount of Africa's trade with the United States, is much more exposed to the effects of these tariffs than the rest of the continent. One of the things that we've seen over the past 15 years is really steadily declining trade between the U.S. and Africa. And in many ways, that is insulating the continent from the most harsh impact of these tariffs. In Southeast Asia, for example, that has a very robust trade with the United States, they're highly exposed.
In Sierra Leone, Kelvin Lewis, editor of Awoko newspaper, says that his country should emulate Trump's America First agenda.
Trump is teaching everyone how to be patriotic, and he's showing the rest of the world that his people come first, and everybody should bow to them. And I think it's a good lesson for the rest of the world that everyone must think about their country first. If we think Sierra Leone first, it would be good for us, just like Trump is saying, America first. People are coming with virtually nothing, and the next minute they claim all our resources as if it is theirs. So we have no reason to go cap in hand begging. We have no reason to depend on other people because we have enough natural resources to feed and house all over 9 million of us Sierra Leoneans. So if we're thinking patriotic, like Trump is thinking patriotic, I think it would be the best for us and it would be the best for Africa. Just imagine if Africa says we close shop and we use our own resources for our benefit, like Trump is telling Americans, I think the rest of the world would stand up and take notice.
Meanwhile, Trump praised himself for imposing higher tariffs worldwide. It succeeded, he said, in bringing countries back to the negotiating table where he believes he has the upper hand.
I'm telling you, these countries are calling us up, kissing my ass. They are dying to make a deal. Please, please make a deal. I'll do anything. I'll do anything, sir. And then I'll see some rebel Republican, some guy that wants to grandstand, say, I think the Congress should take over negotiations. Let me tell you, you don't negotiate like I negotiate.
That was President Trump on the 8th of April at the National Republican Congressional Committee dinner in Washington. Has a trade war instigated by Trump translated into opportunities for African nations to secure alternative markets? Eric Olander.
Not necessarily opportunities yet. And what we learned from COVID and what we've learned from the past 10 years is that any disruptions into the international economy tend to disproportionately impact the most vulnerable countries, not just in Africa, but other parts of the global south. So in terms of opportunities versus risks, I think the risks right now far outweigh the opportunities. That being said, there is a lot more activity now diplomatically between African countries and other non-US countries. And so, for example, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed from Ethiopia was in Vietnam, as was Burundi's president. We're seeing more engagement between Uganda and Indonesia. You're seeing a lot more trade activity and discussions between Brazil and Africa. So African countries, like other countries around the world, are looking for new opportunities that exclude the United States.
Securing markets for exports, which may no longer go to the U.S., is not easy. Kenya's President William Ruto was recently in China for his first state visit. He signed a much-awaited agreement with President Xi Jinping to extend a railway line to the Rift Valley. That deal was 10 years in the making. Finding new markets is challenging, Eric Colander.
It's going to be difficult because opening new markets does take time. And again, this is not a problem unique to Africa. China's foreign policy in Africa isn't that impacted by what happens in the United States. It's been very steady over the past 30 years. And Kenya has been a key node for the Chinese and the Belt and Road Initiative, much more so than other African countries. And really what we saw in Beijing was really the result of 10 years of steady Kenyan diplomacy. They've been trying for almost a decade to get this phase three extension for the standard gauge railway that China built out to the Rift Valley in Naivasha to take it to the Ugandan border. They were denied two, three times, multiple times, that Kenyan presidents have gone to Beijing asking for more money to fund this extension. But on this trip, they came up with a public-private partnership formula, and it looks like they're going to proceed with it. And that's really the result of a decade of steady diplomacy.
Even though it does not take that long for all goods, it is doubtful that African traders will grab new markets during Trump's 90-day pause.
So opening new markets, whether it's in China, Indonesia, Brazil, and elsewhere, does take time. And the other thing is that exporting into developed markets, G7 markets, face an enormous amount of hurdles. I mean, the European Union in particular has agricultural restrictions, which is what a lot of African producers sell. And into the global south, you know, Angola's not going to sell bananas to Brazil, right? So finding the right product mix can be very, very difficult given the restrictions of accessing the most lucrative markets in the world.
John Mark says that investors are not going to rush and invest in Africa because this is a wait-and-see period.
The effects of Trump's trade policies overall, globally, has actually been to depress the oil price. Now, you'd think during a period when tensions in the Middle East are extremely high, when there are problems in major producers such as Venezuela, et cetera, the oil price would be high. But in fact, it's under the psychologically important, psychologically for the market, one must say, important price of $70 a barrel and has been for some week. So that's low. And the reason for that is what they call the demand destruction that the whole Trump policy has placed on global trading.
What does that mean, demand destruction?
Demand destruction means that people are not investing, they're not investing in industry, they're not investing in energy as much as they otherwise would be. It's really a period of wait and see. And I think that leads us to what is the really important question in all this, is that it is going to affect prices very profoundly, and it is going to affect economies at a wider scale. One of the ironies is that although a lower dollar means that African economies should be able to export their goods for more money than otherwise they would receive in their local currencies, the actual concern about a declining dollar, market uncertainties, means that investors are not going to be rushing to come into Africa.
Thank you for listening to RFI. Thank you, John Marks, Editorial Director of African Energy. Thank you, Eric Colander, Editor-in-Chief of the China Global South Project. And thank you, Kelvin Lewis, Editor of Our Co-Newspaper in Sierra Leone.